Over the last 12 years of producing our podcast, one message has truly resonated over and over and over and again. An essential building block to foster a healthy, sustainable global planet is healthy, sustainable local communities. Today, we're talking about access to renewable solar energy and how to do so utilizing the co-op approach. It's really, really an exciting model. Together, we truly do go further. If you are at all interested in community capacity building or access to renewable energy, you will want to stay with us. Hello, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Impact Earth Energy. And this show is really exciting for me on many levels. First of all, there's a great and powerful story here, and our guest will be sharing that. Secondly, we're going to be talking about accessing renewable energy, but with a major twist, neighbors going solar together. So to me, it's about solar, renewable energy, and capacity building in neighborhoods. Our guest is Anya Schulman. And I want to tell you a bit about her before we welcome her and dive in, because she has quite an impressive and impactful journey when it comes to being a disruptor for good. And everybody knows we love disruptors for good and for making a difference for the planet. Anya's official title is Executive Director, Solar United Neighbors. But there's a story behind the title and how she got to be where she is today. Anya has worked for decades on environmental projects and policy up and down the Western Hemisphere, people, the hemisphere. The work she has done has helped her grapple with the issue of sustainable development and how to make complex issues relevant to the community. Solar United Neighbors got its start when her son Walter asked, "Mom, can we go solar?" And we're certainly going to find out where that question led her, for sure. In her role as executive director, Anya has been instrumental in the passage of landmark solar legislation and regulation. In April of 2014, the White House selected Anya as one of the 10 White House champions for change for solar development. And I feel like clapping right now because that is quite an honor. And she was recognized for her groundbreaking work to deploy solar in the National Capital Region. So everybody, please join me in welcoming a tried and true disruptor for good and champion for substantive change. Anya, I warmly welcome you. Thanks for being here. And I can't wait to hear more about the inside scoop of your story and your journey.
Thanks for having me.
So Anya, I always want to sing that song, you know, let's start at the very beginning. It really is a very good place to start. So your son Walter asked you, "Mom, can we go solar?" So what happened? What? Start telling us the rest of that story and how it changed your life forever, I would think.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was a while ago. It was 2007. My son Walter was 12, and he and his best friend Diego had gone to see the movie Inconvenient Truth. And they came back, and they were raring to take action. And being kids that grew up in Washington, D.C., they weren't holding out that government was going to do anything.
That was probably a good thing.
Yeah, they were like, "No, we've got to do it ourselves. Can we go solar?" And so I was like, "I don't know. I don't know anything about solar. Let's try." And we tried for a while, and it was too expensive. It was too confusing. There weren't any installers working in D.C. at the time. And so I went back to Walter and Diego, and I was like, "Look, if we're going to go to all the work to figure this out, we're going to need to get a group because it's not worth just doing it ourselves." And so they invented something called the Mount Pleasant Solar Cooperative. And really the idea was gather neighbors from our neighborhood, which is right near the zoo in Washington, D.C., in sort of a downtown area, and get a group together to work together. And so they made these flyers. And I got to tell you, if I didn't have two 12-year-old boys in charge of the project, we would have quit after the second double flight of stairs. Because in my neighborhood, the houses are row houses with two sets of steps to get up to each front door. And they ran up all those stairs and dropped in these flyers and said, you know, would you go solar if you could save money? And do you want to join the group? And to our utter shock and surprise, after dropping off a bunch of flyers, we had 50 households sign up. And that began our journey. And so really, for the next 2 years, we met in each other's living rooms. We met our neighbors. We learned about solar. We got to know the companies. And eventually, we passed a bill in 2008 and then took 45 houses solar in 2009. And then it was kind of like a snowball running down a steep hill. We just kept going. And other neighborhoods were asking us for help. And soon there was not one co-op, but 11 different co-ops across DC. We passed more legislation in 2011. We passed community solar legislation in 2013. And each cycle, we would organize more people across DC, get more unanimous support. It would make it easier to pass legislation, and then more people could be involved. And so we got community solar, and then we got a higher incentive for solar, and then we passed a low-income solar program, and eventually a 100% bill for DC. So it's been a cycle, and it's really informed my organization, Solar United Neighbors, our fundamental theory of change, of how we see change work. Is we call it go solar, join together, fight for your energy rights. But what we see it is a cycle where you do it over and over and over again. You go solar, you meet your neighbors, you figure out what's next, what are the barriers, what's keeping more people from going solar, how do we expand solar, pass policy, do it again, rinse and repeat, repeat and repeat.
I love it. And I just want to invite everybody to press pause here for a minute, because I'm really being an active listener. And just the fact that two 12-year-olds went to see An Inconvenient Truth is noteworthy from where I sit, because it was a hard one for me to get through. I think it's great. I've done climate reality training with Al Gore. He's, to me, an amazing human being. But that movie was really long with a lot of details. I mean, it had a lot of great video, but for them to go and to take that away, I want to tell Al Gore, like, I'm barely kidding, unless he already knows, unless you connected that dot. But to see the power, not just of storytelling, but of your son and his friend wanting to do something, and you were the one with the power, the ability to do it, and supporting them. It's like, I need to have both of them on the show at some point too. I'm so not kidding. So let's press pause there, everybody. Think about what two 12-year-olds started happening for the planet. And then, Anya, so that was DC. So I'm assuming that you passed legislation in the district. Is that correct?
Yeah, it ended up being multiple times. So it was 2008, 2011, 2013, 2015, and then last year we passed the 100% bill.
It's like, yeah, rinse, repeat. I love that analogy. Just rinse, repeat, and here we are again working on another bill. So at what point was the decision made that what was going on was going to be Solar United Neighbors, and then all of a sudden you're the executive director, and somehow you have to weave into the story that now the reason I found out about you is because of Brett Fanshaw, who was the director for the state of Arizona. So there's a lot that happened in between passing legislation in the District of Columbia and becoming a national model that has expanded.
Yeah, and I always say that the whole process has felt a little bit like falling into a swift moving stream and just getting carried down.
I just love it.
In the beginning, it was, as I said, it was our neighbors working together. It was really being led by Walter and Diego. And then we started to have these super volunteers and other people and other nodes. And it grew organically. And it was just a volunteer job. Not only did it grow across DC, but it also expanded to Virginia and Maryland and West Virginia, just because people heard about us. But it was still a volunteer effort. One thing that happened early on is Discovery did a documentary that featured our work. And then I started getting calls from all over the country. And people were like, how do we do that here? How do we do that here? And again, it was a volunteer effort. And I started to have people showing up in my kitchen and hanging out for days at a time working on this. And about 5 years later, we decided to get serious, become a 501c3, a nonprofit, so we could accept some grants. But essentially, because my volunteers were like, if you want me to keep working on this, you have to start paying me.
Paying me, yes. Yeah. I have to live. I need a livable wage. Yeah.
So it seemed like a reasonable request. The woman who's my chief operating officer, Emily Stever, is one of those volunteers that eventually demanded money and helped drive us. And now today we're in 11 states. We actually have a national program where we do all sorts of solar education, technical assistance, solar membership, solar Girl Scouts. We have a scouting sun patch program. We help run the national solar tours. We have a lot of national programming, but then we have deep programming where we're running these co-ops in 11 states, and Arizona is one of our newest states. So we're super excited about the work there. And Brett, we've got I should give you the numbers. I mean, we've done a total at this point of 400. I just got the numbers just before the interview today, 4,736 signed contracts. So homes that have gone solar or businesses. And we've done 245 different group purchases or co-ops. And the Tucson one is open till the end of July. We're very excited about it. We've got 75 people in the group already, and it's not too late to sign up.
It's so exciting. And when I talk to Brett, and I do admit that after 12 years, you know, people email me and they say they'd like to have a conversation. And sometimes I think, okay, you know, take a deep breath. Well, I couldn't stop asking him questions. And I say that sincerely because there's so many things I love about the model. And, you know, you can go into a little bit more detail, but basically, if I'm correct, it's group purchasing. It's the power of bulk purchasing that makes solar affordable. And I also love that you work with local installers, because if you're an environmentalist, you know local is better. And I kept saying, Brett, you got to be kidding me. You know, who's in charge now? Let's get that person on the show. So it was a very genuine excitement on my part, especially since I've lived in Tucson for 45 years. So I don't know if you want to add anything to that, because believe me, I have a lot more questions.
I'd love to just explain the process a little bit, because it's something we've done this so many times. We've really refined it and we're really proud of the process. And I think the fundamental idea for us is that the local people, the local group are really in charge. And what we do is provide the technical assistance. So it's a lot more than saving money. Sometimes you save a lot, sometimes you save a little, but it's all the decision making. It's selecting an installer, getting good quality equipment, ensuring that everything's going to run smoothly. And sometimes there's problems with local permitting, or there's problems with the utility. And what we found over and over again, and it gets back to that cycle of repeating and repeating, is when you have a group of people, you have much more power to solve the problems. Right. So what we do is we organize the group. We hold info sessions right now. Because of COVID, we're doing the info sessions online, and there's tapes. So you can actually just listen to a recording if you want. You sign up. It's free. We do an assessment of your roof. That's free. We look at your roof remotely and tell you, you know, if it's a good fit for solar. And then we issue an RFP on behalf of the group. but it's the group itself that picks the installer. We're completely installer neutral. And so the group gets to really put their own values into the decision. Do they want a local installer? Do they want the cheapest? Do they want someone who's doing job training? What is important to them? And what, you know, they look at their track record, they look at all the specs, and we guide them to understand what they should be looking for, but it's the members themselves that make the choice. And then once the installer is chosen, then they visit each home, they do a personalized contract proposal for each homeowner. And then the homeowner has 30 days to decide whether they're going to actually sign the contract. So it's only binding once you're fully informed, fully educated, and have a really solid proposal. And then you get to make up your mind. And then we don't stop there. So we follow up with the installer. We troubleshoot if there are problems. And then key, at the end, we get everybody together. We have a party, and we figure out what's next. So do we want to expand solar in Tucson? Do we want to build a low-income program? Do we want to work on statewide policy? Do we want to, you know, what are the priorities of the group? And so that's how our cycle goes. But it's really about going solar, but also building an activist group. And we're excited about having local groups and local partners and the local people really drive the show.
And no wonder I got excited. I mean, I am like a localist extraordinaire, capacity building. All of those things impact climate change, climate adaptation, climate mitigation. So you could, we got on this fast. And I said to Kelly, our show producer, we have to get this person on the show. And I'm going to tell Brett, I know you're working with the Center for Biological Diversity, which is an amazing organization that does really big changes throughout our country alone. And I love Physicians for Social Responsibility. I mean, Barbara is one of the key people in there. She's a good friend of mine. And I'm going to tell Brett, you better put Mrs. Green's World as a local partner, because I want to help spread the word. And I can be a local and a national partner too, because we have a really great engaged national audience. So I'm going to do that little plug for myself after we do the interview.
Definitely take you up on that.
Oh my gosh, I am really excited. And we have a robust social media presence. And this is everything that we're all about, especially since you are such a disruptor for good. That's a loving phrase in our world. So my next question for you is, we were talking a little bit about partners. And I'm interested in that too. I want to go there. How do you find the partners? Do you just put feelers out? Because I want to emphasize again, no two communities are alike, and you know that. So what happened in, you know, Memphis, Tennessee, or wherever, doesn't necessarily translate to what happens in Tucson. So talk to me about how you pick partners.
You know, often it's partners pick us.
Got it.
And that's often how we get to a community, is a group or an individual will reach out to us and say, why don't you come here? And we'll be, you know, and that starts the conversation. We have so many different kinds of partners, and we really believe and actually have the data to show over and over again that the success of a co-op depends on our partners. In a couple of places, we have statewide partners. For example, in Florida, statewide, we've been working with the League of Women Voters, and then we work together with them selecting sites. In a bunch of places, we work with the city government or the county government. We work with Cuyahoga County in Cleveland. We work with the city of Miami in Miami. So in some places, we have big partners like that, Montgomery County in Maryland. Often it's a church or a synagogue that wants to sponsor the project. Sometimes it's a school. Sometimes it's a high school student. So there is no partner too big or too small for us. All we want is somebody who has or is willing to build a network and who is passionate about making change.
And look what's happened. And, you know, I thought a lot about this one of my next to last questions, but I find in talking to other people that are either leaders or CEOs or executive directors that five-year plans are so yesterday because the world is changing so rapidly. I mean, it's like technology changes, COVID-19 knocks on your door. There's so many different things that impact. So I remember reading a long time ago that Microsoft does a one-year plan, right? So I guess I want to talk to you more about what is your vision? Is it steadfast in just continuing to grow and expand and put more solar on roofs? Because you're doing so much more than that. You are building neighborhoods and connection and capacity. But what's the vision that you hold onto in your scope for the organization?
You know, I think what we're really focused on is enabling the clean energy transition in a way that local communities benefit. That local communities are in the driver's seat. And so for us, solar is the corner. We call it the cornerstone or the entry point. And what we mean is rooftop solar is a way for everyone or a really broad number of people and actors to have a stake in the clean energy economy. But as you know, the energy system is changing really rapidly. And so we keep looking to what's the best way to both expand equity in the clean energy system and expand access. So in addition to rooftop solar, we also work on community solar because people who don't have roofs can't do rooftop solar, but they can be part of a neighborhood facility. So that's one big piece. Also, programs for low income, for people who can't afford solar, is a big part of what we've been doing and developing. And we have run a very large project in Washington, D.C., and we're seeding pilots in other cities and looking for partners with that. And then, as the clean energy system gets more complicated, we're getting more complicated. So we're looking at rate design, integrating electric vehicles, integrating batteries. How do batteries make communities more safe and resilient when there's power outages or storms? So we're keep adding sort of layers to that bedrock, which is the co-ops and the model, which is community organizing, but always from the angle of how does it help the local community build local control over the energy system and also get the benefit of the clean energy transition, whether that benefit is jobs, saving money, new industry, or making their own power.
And how truly wonderful of you to put a spotlight on the equity issue. It's, of course, front and center in the news these days, but throughout my 12 years, it's been the underserved, the underrepresented, the people without no voice. In many cases, they are the ones that could benefit from solar the most because of the energy savings, and they are the least able to afford it, to be educated about it, to have their landlords give a flying you-know-what about it. So it, to me, I think I said to Brett, you're the whole green enchilada, which we like to say here in Tucson, but there's a lot of levels for this to me, as I have said. So another question is, do you find, I know that in Arizona, a bill was passed, very, very hard work, so that neighborhood associations or homeowners associations cannot ban solar. And it's been tested over and over again. Like in some of the truly upscale gated communities, people say, oh, it's just so ugly. Well, that has been fought and won. In most communities, are you still finding the need to get involved in the legislative process, or is that getting easier?
I think it feels a little bit right now like there's no end, but we're at different points in the fight depending on where we are.
Right.
So in states, you know, some states, like we just passed a similar HOA bill in Virginia this year. So we're just fighting for like the basic right to do solar, to have third party ownership for schools and municipal buildings and government buildings and churches. So sometimes we're fighting around the basics, the fight to be allowed to net meter, to get credit for the solar production. And
right.
Some cases we're sort of on the lead leading edge, which is time of use and integrating storage and integrating electric vehicles and a dynamic grid of the future, or low-income community solar innovative projects. So there's a whole spectrum, but there's so much to do that I wouldn't say that the need to pass new policy is diminishing anytime soon.
Isn't it just mind-boggling? It just blows me away, because there is no downside, because the sun is going to come out tomorrow. Especially if you live in Tucson, you have a really high likelihood the sun will come out tomorrow, and you don't need sun to come out every day for effective solar. So it blows my mind how to serve your electricity bill and diminish that, and to help the planet in a really significant way with clean, renewable energy. It's just, I guess it's a good thing that I don't understand it. So I want to tell stories like yours to our hundreds of thousands of listeners. So my last question, unless you have anything that I have not asked and you'd like to add, is we always like to end the show with two things, a call to action, and then I love to end the show with my last words, which is kind of a commentary on, you know, why we spent this time together and what you're doing. So if you had one call to action that you would love for people to take or care enough after listening to this podcast, what would you like them to be inspired to do?
Well, our usual call to action is, if you haven't done it yet, go solar. So, and we're there to help you no matter where you are in the country. You can become a member and we'll give you direct technical assistance, or you can find a group near you if you're in a state where we're doing groups. Certainly, if you're in Tucson, check out the Tucson Solar Co-op. But even if you're not in the position to go solar, we have all kinds of things that people can do to help support and build this democratic clean energy movement. And so I just ask you to sign up, to volunteer, get on our mailing list, become a member, and join us.
It's just a great call to action. And all of those ways to do that will be on the show page of this podcast. So you will be one click away, listeners, from being inspired. And I just want to remind everybody, if you think you can't, you can't. And if you think you can, because look at what those 12-year-olds did and how they changed, how Walter changed his mother's life forever. And so I just, my deep gratitude for the work, and I will stay connected with Brett, and I just applaud you for making a difference. And my last words are, and before I go on, is there anything else that I didn't cover that you'd like to talk about, Anya?
No, it was really great having a chance to talk to you.
It was so great. I loved your passion, your enthusiasm, your added toward to overcoming obstacles, and that to me speaks volumes about why it's been successful. So my food for thought is, if you ever doubted the power of one or two people being able to make a difference, indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. That's how big ideas start. So don't doubt it. And if you're listening and you're in a small town in the Midwest, you can be that person. You don't have to be a 12-year-old, but you can be that person to get your neighbors together and take action. So that's one of my reflections. And the other one is why solar matters. It is a forever thing. That's why they call it renewable energy. And it will make such a difference. Every solar panel that's installed helps reduce the impact of fossil fuel and other things on our environment. It's a good thing. And our utility company, in my opinion, is aggressively moving to get more solar on rooftops. And I see proof of that. And my third thing is why I love what I do. I love what I do because I get to meet and spend time with and learning from people like Anya and Brett and other exciting ideas that are making a difference for the planet. And there's that expression that, you know, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. And some days I do feel like I work, but most days I don't. When I started prepping for this interview, everybody, I got so excited, and I hope that the word spreads. And I want to go a little bit off the radar, because we interviewed a man named Craig Miller from Defenders of Wildlife a couple of weeks ago, and his call to action was to ask people to comment on the open comment for U.S. Game and Fish on the status of wolves and they're being named an essential species. And I talked about it to groups that I presented to on Zoom, and I talked about it on the podcast. We put it on the show. And I got a thank you from them last week from Erica Prather, who I just love. And they had over 40,000 comments, which was massive. And I don't take full credit, but I know people texted me and messaged me and emailed me that they wanted, they went on, they educated themselves and they made comments. So my reason for telling that is hopefully you will want to do something after you heard what Anya has done and the difference she's making for all of us, because it impacts everybody on the planet. So my last thanks is always to you, our listeners, because without you, there would be no us. And wouldn't that be sad? I'd be very sad. So Anya, thank you. I hope you'll spread the word by putting this podcast up on social media and spreading it to your many engaged communities, because it will help just power the movement. And I heartfelt thanks. I'm sure you could tell that I was pretty darn excited and engaged about interviewing you.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to partnering with you on the Tucson Co-op and then others going forward.
I'm there. I am so there. You can tell. And I'm saying it on air so you can hold me to it. So everybody, make it a great green day. Thanks for being a part of our world. And Anya, thanks for showing up in mine.